Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us in just a little while, Dick Van Dyke. He has a memoir, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. There is nothing salacious, as he says in his book. He's had some tough times and battled a few demons. But he tried to write an honest story with lightness, insight, hope, and some laughs and some lessons, too. It's very interesting. But I can't believe how hard this guy worked. The early part of the book is he's doing these radio shows and television shows and trying to make it as a comedian, but he's got hours of when he gets a job, he has an hour to fill, and he's doing laugh and news and all kinds of things to fill an hour of television. It's just an very interesting story. Really broke. A lot of times very broke. Car broke down in the middle of nowhere. No money, not a dime. And obviously he made it. And he says it's due to a couple people. One of them is Carl Reiner. And we're going to hear from Carl Reiner a little bit later this hour. And we'll talk about the comedians he loved and talk with Dick Van Dyke, which should be fun. We have about a half hour with him, so we thought we would start with a bit of classic comedy, which we haven't heard for a long time. And so we're going to hear a little bit about Newhart. We will hear from Carl Reiner, who, because of Carl Reiner, Dick Van Dyke is very, very well known because he produced the Dick Van Dyke Show, and he wrote the foreword to Dick's book. So we'll hear some Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks later on. It should be fun. We're going to have some fun this hour. Rhonda Fanning is joining me right now because she has an announcement about a little bit of a contest we had last week. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine, you?
Good.
Good.
That's right. Marty Grothy was on the show last week, and we had a challenge of people to come up with their own unique neverism. And Marty selected three people. We got a ton of response. A lot of people emailed and Facebooked, messaged us. Marty, I sent the list to Marty. He got back to us. He picked three winners. So these three individuals will be getting a signed copy of the book sent to them. So I'll be in touch shortly after I get off the air here. The three winners are Randy from Madison, and his neverism was never say, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle to a group of Southern Baptists. Marty really liked that one.
I know Marty liked that one. He laughed.
Sandra was also picked. Never come to work in the morning until the night shift. How tired you are. That one was emailed to us.
That's a good one, too. I like that one.
And Sarah also emailed us in a neverism. Never tickle a sleeping baby. So those are the three winners that Marty selected. So I'll be in touch with those individuals, and they'll be getting a signed copy of the book. But thanks to everyone who participated. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. We can have fun here.
Sometimes.
Let's
play some comedy then.
All right. Thanks, Rhonda, very much. That was fun. And thanks to Marty for making those books available to some of our listeners. Dick Van Dyke will be joining us shortly. But we are going to play a little bit of classic comedy to get in the mood. Dick Van Dyke is doing a few interviews on his book, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business, and is a pretty, you know, admirable guy in addition to being a guy with oodles and oodles of talent. He has great stories to tell about Walt Disney and Carl Reiner and Mary Tyler Moore and his big break on Broadway in Bye Bye Birdie, and how he learned to dance and sing, and his being a track star, his time in Danville, Illinois, his announcing on the radio and doing shows on television stations in Atlanta and New York and Louisiana, New Orleans, and in many places. So he will be with us a little bit later this hour. But we thought it's been a long time since we played some comedy. So to get into the mood for Dick Van Dyke, we thought we would play a little bit of comedy. And we'll culminate our comedy, classic comedy, with Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. Carl Reiner wrote the foreword to Dick Van Dyke's book and was the producer and very, very witty, great writer for the Dick Van Dyke Show. So we'll hear from him a little bit later. But we picked a few here that we thought you might get a kick out of because We can always use a good laugh, and so we will laugh a little bit before to get us in the mood for talking to Dick Van Dyke. We start with a Bob Newhart piece on Poodles in Planes. This is from Something Like This, the Bob Newhart Anthology, a tremendous success in television and films. We tried to get him on the air, but we have been unsuccessful so far. We'll try again. He earned an Emmy and a Peabody Award for his work on the Bob Newhart Variety Show, another great show. Was followed by the phenomenal success of the Bob Newhart Show, which ran from 72 to 78, and Newhart from 82 to 90. He's appeared in over 14 featured films, was honored with the distinction of being an American master by the PBS documentary of the same title. He released in 2006 his book, I Shouldn't Even Be Doing This, which became a New York Times bestseller. He's won 3 Grammys and The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. It is still ranked as the 20th best-selling album of all time, according to Billboard. He has a unique style. So we start our comedy with Bob Newhart on Poodles and Planes.
We have two poodles, two little poodles named Willard and Wilbur. They're toy poodles, and they came out of the same litter. There were two of them. And I have nothing against poodles. They're very nice, as a matter of fact, or dogs. I'm not advising you not to get dogs, but don't get two dogs. I'll tell you the problem. The problem is if you go out, and then when you come back, you'll find a message for you from one of them, usually on the carpet or something like that. And the problem is with two poodles, you don't know which one did it, you see? It's a case of the phantom strikes again. And you can't punish both of them because the one who went on the paper figures, well, they don't want it there, so... I'll do it on the couch next time. I don't know. Maybe but we had them up in Vegas. I was just up in Las Vegas. And we flew up, and I don't dig flying a great deal. I take what's known as a white-knuckle flight in the airline business. I'm not even too wild about the ramp that, you know, I have to get drunk to get on the ramp to get into the plane. I didn't used to mind flying when they had the props going, because when I fly, I like a lot of noise going on the wings, when, you know. But when you're on the jets now, they just have the pods out there, and you're sitting there, and you're looking out, and they're going, and you're saying, they're probably on. No, I'm sure. No, I know they're on. I know they're on. Oh, yeah. And then before you take off, this has nothing to do with it. It doesn't prove anything. It hasn't got to do with maintenance or anything, but they have a checklist they go through. This is just for the passengers. It makes them feel better. The pilot or the stewardess, whoever happens to be flying the particular flight, you're on, comes out and kicks the tires. Now this... This is very reassuring, you know, when you're about to fly over mountains and everything. It's sort of like checking for a new car or something. And then, after that, they count the engines. You know. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I don't mind that too much when they check it against the list to see whether they're right or not. This bothers me a little bit, so it's kind of weird. But it's very strange. They have new rate tables now. There's a big competitive thing among airlines. And they have rate plans. They all have to charge the same rate, but they have ways of getting around it. Like, we went up there on Thursday. This is family day. See, now this costs you less if you go on family day. Then we took a night flight, which is less. And we took prop, which is less. And we took coach, which is even less. Well, it turned out the airline paid us $4... to go to Las Vegas.
A little bit of classic comedy before we talk with Dick Van Dyke, Bob Newhart on Poodles and Planes. Here's a comedian who's a relatively young guy who's caught a lot of the country by storm, particularly among younger people. Brian Regan is... This is from 1997. He appeared on The Late Show with David Letterman. in 1995 and really solidified his place on the show and recently made his 20th appearance. He also includes regular visits to Late Night with Conan O'Brien on his schedule. He is a dorm room favorite. He is very popular among young people. And his 1997 CD, Brian Regan Live, has sold over 150,000 copies and consistently charts in iTunes top 10 comedy albums. This piece is titled Brian Regan Horns and Windshields. It's from 97, as I said, and it's from Brian Regan Live, the stand-up comedy collection.
I know nothing about cars. A friend of mine let me borrow his car recently, and he didn't bother to tell me there was a short in the horn. The thing would honk like every 8 seconds for no reason. I'm, you know, just driving along. Oh no. So I get stuck behind this guy in bumper to bumper traffic. How do I explain to him that I'm not trying to honk at him, you know? Just looking around. Oh, no. Give him a little wave. It's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. I'm out of my mind. I didn't want him to think that. So I started pretending like I was listening to some sports thing on the radio, you know. Bam, yay, go team, go. Bam, go. Go, my favorite sports team, go. Bam, yay, they scored a goal unit basket. Go, squadron, do good. Beat the opponents soundly in the skirmish. I was in my friend's car the other day. He's driving. He had a pair of glasses on. I said, hey, I didn't know you wear glasses. He goes, oh, I only need them when I drive. What the hell does that mean? Like you get out of the car, boom, I can see. It's beautiful. If you only need glasses when you drive, why not drive with a prescription windshield? Yeah, looking around. Have little bifolks read the street signs, you know? Look at, oh, what? What is that? Oh, oh, that's a cow. Wait, I thought that was a stop sign. It's a cow. Okay. Who knows? I think you should buckle your seatbelt, but I feel bad for the people in the back seat. They always seem like they're less important than people in the front. You ever watch like four people get in a car? People in the back just sitting there, you know? People are front all like buckling up like they're going out of the atmosphere. You know, click, click, clickety, click, 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 click. People in the back going, hey, what's going on up there? It don't matter, you're in the back. Your belts are squished down in those seats anyway. You'll never find them. Hey, wait a second. Don't start the car. They're trying to pull them out. Give me a rope or something.
We're playing a little bit of classic comedy. What you just heard was Brian Regan, Horns and Windshields from 1997. It's from Brian Regan Live, the stand-up comedy collection. We're playing a little bit of classic comedy before Dick Van Dyke, who will be joining us about at the half-hour mark here. He is the author of his memoir. It's just been released, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. So he will be joining us momentarily, but we thought we'd play a little bit of classic comedy, which we haven't done for a long time. It's fun. It's good to do this. This is a piece from Steve Martin, and it's titled Changes in the Memory After 50. It is from Fierce Pajamas, selections from an anthology of humor writing from The New Yorker, appearing in The New Yorker in 1998. Martin, of course, a comedian, writer, playwright, producer, musician, and composer who has won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing Achievement in Comedy, Variety, or Music in 1969 for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. He has won two Grammys for Best Comedy Album, 1978, Let's Get Small, and 1979, A Wild and Crazy Guy. He also won Grammy Awards for his country and bluegrass albums, and in the year 2000, he won the Lifetime Achievement Award in Comedy at the American Comedy Awards. He has guest-hosted Saturday Night Live 15 times, although despite a common misconception, he was never a cast member. Steve Martin, changes in the memory after 50.
Changes in the memory after 50, by Steve Martin, 1998. Bored? Here's a way the over 50 set can easily kill a good half hour. 1. Place your car keys in your right hand. 2. With your left hand, call a friend and confirm a lunch or dinner date. 3. Hang up the phone. 4. Now look for your car keys. The lapses of memory that occur after 50 are normal and in some ways beneficial. There are certain things it's better to forget, like the time Daddy once failed to praise you, and now 40 years later, you have to count the tiles in the bathroom, first in multiples of 3, then in multiples of 5, and so on until they come out even, or else you can't get out of the shower. The memory is selective, and sometimes it will select 1956 and 1963, and that's all. Such memory lapses don't necessarily indicate a more serious health problem. The rule is that if you think you have a pathological memory problem, you probably don't. In fact, the most serious indicator is when you're convinced you're fine, and yet people often ask you, "Why are you here in your pajamas at the Kennedy Center Honors?" Let's say you've just called your best friend Joe and invited him to an upcoming anniversary party, and then minutes later you call Joe back to invite him to the same party again. This does not mean that you are losing it, or are not playing with a full deck, or are not all there, or that you're eating with the dirigibles, or shellacking the waxed egg, or looking inside your own mind and finding nothing there, or any of the other demeaning epithets that are said about people who are peeling an empty banana. It does mean, however, that perhaps Joe is no longer on the list of things that you're going to remember. This is Joe's fault. He should be more memorable. He should have a name like El Elegante. Sometimes it's fun to sit in your garden and try to remember your dog's name. Here's how. Simply watch the dog's ears while calling out pet names at random. This is a great summer activity, especially in combination with Name That Wife and Who Am I? These games actually strengthen the memory and make it possible to solve more complicated problems such as, is this the 6th time I've urinated this hour or the 7th? This, of course, is easily answered by tiny pencil marks applied during the day. Note to self, remember to write article about waxy buildup. If you have a doctor who is over 50, it's wise to pay attention to his changing memory profile. There is nothing more disconcerting than a patient and a healer staring at each other across an examining table, wondering why they're there. Watch out for the stethoscope being placed on the forehead or the briefcase. Watch out for greetings such as, "Hello, you?" Be concerned if while looking for your file he keeps referring to you as one bad boy. Men should be wary if the doctor while examining their prostate suddenly says, "I'm sorry, but do I know you?" There are several theories to explain the memory problems of advancing age. One is that the brain is full. It simply has too much data to compute. This is easy to understand if we realize that the name of your third-grade teacher is still occupying space, not to mention the lyrics to Valari. One solution for older men is to take all the superfluous data swirling around in the brain and download it into the newly large stomach, where there is plenty of room. This frees the brain to house more relevant information, like the particularly troublesome days of the week. Another solution is to take regular doses of ginkgo biloba, an extract from a tree in Asia whose memory is so indelible that one day it will hunt down and kill all the humans who have been eating it. It is strongly advised that those taking ginkgo biloba label the bottle memory pills. There is nothing more embarrassing than looking at a bottle of ginkgo biloba and thinking it's a reliquary for a Spanish explorer. So, in summary, waxy buildup is a problem all of us face. Only a good, strong cleanser, used once or twice a month, will save us the humiliation of that petrified yellow crust on our furniture. Again, I recommend an alcohol-free, polymer-based cleanser applied with a damp cloth. Good luck.
That's Steve Martin's writing from Changes in the Memory After 50, an anthology of humor writing from The New Yorker. Dick Van Dyke is going to join us. A very important person in Dick Van Dyke's life, one of the most important persons in really noticing his talent and allowing him to flourish on The Dick Van Dyke Show, was Carl Reiner, and he's written the foreword to Dick's book. Dick will be joining us momentarily. We're going to play a bit of comedy now from Carl Reiner, who is, of course, a film producer, director, American actor, writer, and comedian. He has won 9 Emmy Awards and 1 Grammy Award during his career. And some of the funniest bits in classic comedy are the 2,000-year-old man bits. They're just hysterical. Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. This is Parents, the First Place You Ever Lived. It's from the 2,000-year-old man in the year 2000, which won a Grammy Award for spoken word performance. Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks.
You've never told me about your parents.
Mother, wonderful woman, short and busy, cleaning and cooking and killing.
Wait a minute, killing?
Chickens. Yeah. Sure, Friday night, anything but feathers was a goner near us.
What was your father like?
Candles out at 7.
Oh, yes.
He was strict.
You had him on trapeze and coups with him.
Yes. We called him Pachs and Kachs.
That's right.
You call it what you call it, we call it what we call it.
Yeah. Did your father ever raise his hand to you?
He did. We weren't afraid.
You weren't afraid when he raised his hand?
Not at all. No. When he brought it down, we were scared. Who cares? Yeah. He raised his hand, you know.
Yes.
Brought it down, you had a duck, you had a move, you had to have moves.
So you're saying he was a disciplinarian.
There was no Aryan in that man. Never mind disciplinarian.
You know something? You never spoke about your siblings.
Yes. I had 3 brothers, Shem, Baruch, and Tov.
And no sisters.
And a sister, Peggy Sue.
Peggy Sue. That's a cheap. Peggy Sue, it doesn't sound like a biblical name.
Her real name was Kasha, but she went to school. Everybody was named Darlene.
Sorry, to change the subject, if I may.
Sure.
Put your mind back to when you were young. What's the first place you ever lived?
We lived in caves. It was dank.
How long did you live there, by the way?
Well, we lived there quite a few years till we were dispossessed.
How could you be dispossessed? There were no landlords.
A lion comes in, you're dispossessed.
Oh, I see.
So you don't argue. You don't go to Judge Wapshack. You just say, just move away from the mouth, please. Let us out. It's your cave. We don't want to argue. We just let us out.
Yes. And after you left the cave.
After we left. The next dwellings, huts. Thatched huts, straw huts, mud huts, stone huts, huts.
Of all the places, the caves, the huts, where were you the happiest?
1142 Sutton Place South. You never saw such a lot. What a lobby there. With a fountain with blue, red.
How long did you live at Sutton Place South?
I was there about a year and a half.
And what happened?
Again, dispossessed.
By who?
Wolves.
Wolves in New York City?
Izzy and Irene Wolf came back from Europe.
Oh, this is sublet.
And I was a sublet. They came back a little early.
Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks, Parents, the First Place You Ever Lived. Carl Reiner figuring prominently in Dick Van Dyke's life and is because of his enormous talent and his recognition of talent in other people that the Dick Van Dyke Show was as popular and well done as it was. Dick Van Dyke is going to be joining us momentarily here on the Ideas Network. He is the author of his memoir, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. He talks about really, really hard work for a number of years doing hour-long radio shows and television shows in which he had to do everything. He did the comedy, he did the news, he mistakenly did tornado warnings. He had a lot of talented classmates when he was growing up in Danville, Illinois, like Donald O'Connor and Bobby Short. He spent Saturdays in the movie theater. He loved Charlie Chaplin, Laurel and Hardy, Buster Keaton, and had a chance later in his life to meet both Buster Keaton and Stan Laurel. He was particularly taken with Stan Laurel. He had some very interesting experiences early on with CBS with Walter Cronkite and Dave Garraway, buying the Dave Garraway glasses so he could kind of look like him. Very skinny, talented kid, and it's amazing how there are certain people in our lives who sort of notice what our talents are and can guide us through. And there were a couple people, Gower Champion and Carl Reiner, who did that for Dick Van Dyke. So he has a lot to say about that program, about Julie Andrews and Mary Poppins and Walt Disney, and all of that will be coming up relatively soon. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We already have a number of emails that have come in for Dick Van Dyke, and we'll be taking phone calls fairly early on after we chat for a few minutes here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.